Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The new book, Daybreak in Gaza, gathers almost 100 accounts of Gazan lives and stories from before and during Israel's ongoing bombardments. Poets, writers, shopkeepers, doctors, and farmers. Co-editors Mahmoud Muna and Matthew Teller worked on this project to humanize the people dismissed as statistics and to illuminate hidden stories to evoke the spirit of a place under attack through the lives of its people. They write, quote, "We contacted hundreds of people, not just Gaza's poets and writers, but also its doctors, shopkeepers, office workers. At a time of profound anguish, bereavement, and loss, we found that Gazans, even those surviving starvation and bombardment, were not only willing to talk, but often desperate to do so. Stories poured out. In an unimaginable context of death and wholesale destruction, Gazans wanted urgently to be heard, to record and preserve whatever once counted as normal and valuable and meaningful. Many were keeping war diaries already, unpublished, and posted piecemeal on social media. In many cases, we don't know what happened to our Gaza contributors since they spoke to us. We can only hope they have survived," end quote. The new book, Daybreak in Gaza, Stories of Palestinian Lives and Culture, is dedicated to justice, accountability, and the people of Gaza. People like Heba Al-Makadma, a writer, English-Arabic translator, and student of pharmacology at Al-Azhar University in Gaza. She writes, "As I walk through the streets of Rafah today, all I see is fear, the fear of life and the fear of death. We are living in fear every moment of the day. We now also fear that we will never have our lives back. In this war, who am I? To the world, it seems I'm just a number, a person who is counted on a list of people displaced, people injured, or people hungry and thirsty. And if the next bomb is for me, I will be another number to add to the number of people killed in the genocide, and then I will be forgotten." Those are the words of Heba Al-Makadma, a student of pharmacology at Al-Azhar University in Gaza. Joining us are the co-editors of Daybreak in Gaza. Matthew Teller is a UK-based author and broadcaster. His journalism has been featured by many publications, including the BBC and The Guardian. Matthew Teller is the author of Nine Quarters of Jerusalem, a new biography of the Old City. Matthew grew up in a Jewish family in London and now talks about his movement into anti-Zionism and the importance of understanding the difference between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. Hi, Matthew. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello there, Rose. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you. Juliet Tuma is Global Communications Director for UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East, covering Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan. Juliet Tuma travels frequently to Gaza from UNRWA's headquarters in Amman. She has been closely involved with Daybreak in Gaza since the beginning of the project. Hi, Juliet. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
We're also joined by Mahmoud Muna. Mahmoud's family runs the Educational Bookshop in Jerusalem, one of the most celebrated Palestinian cultural institutions. Mahmoud Muna has written for the London Review of Books and Jerusalem Quarterly. He recently published the first Arabic edition of Granta magazine. In February, the Israeli police ransacked Mahmoud's bookshop and arrested him and his nephew for, quote, violating public order. They were held for 48 hours and were placed under house arrest. Hi, Mahmoud. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Mahmoud, I want to start off with you. You are in Jerusalem. How far are you from Gaza City?
Ah, wow. Psychologically or by actual distance? By actual distance is not much. We are 50 miles max, maybe 60 miles away, an hour plus drive on the roads that we have. But psychologically, it is very far. It's a place that is all, has for the entirety of my life, has been almost impossible to be in with the existence of checkpoints and Israeli restrictions on Palestinians moving into or traveling or even visiting the city. I had very, very little chance in my life to actually go to the Strip and enjoy its beach and enjoy the warmth and the hospitality of its people.
Well, that's why I asked. You're only an hour away, and yet in interviews you've said you have never been to Gaza.
Indeed, there is only one or two years in which in my life, in my 40 years old life, there would have been one or two years where I could have possibly made the trip. But for the entirety of my life, it was always forbidden. I didn't take the chances for those 2 years. So a big part of working on this book is also discovering Gaza for myself, if you like.
Wow.
Discovering the cultural, social, and historical place.
Mahmoud, what has this been like for you? Because we have been watching this unfold over the last 2 years on our screens, sometimes in real time, thanks to the Palestinians in Gaza who are taking videos, interviewing people, and doing whatever they can to get the information out to the world. You know, here I am in the Bay Area, but you're an hour from what is happening, and yet you can't do anything. I mean, what has this experience been like for you to watch this unfold, knowing that you are so close?
Well, this is partially why I worked on this project and in the book, because I refused the notion that I can't do anything. I work in literature. I work in books. I believe in books' ability to change lives. I believe in the power of the written work. So I refused to submit to this hopelessness or inactivity or inability to do anything. And that's why I embarked on this project. The people in Gaza I relate to. I mean, they are in some ways my people. They are Palestinian. I share this cultural, national identity with them. But I don't think that's the only reason. I mean, I could also relate to any other people nearby, close to me, who are also suffering the carnage that we see in Gaza. I think we should go beyond the limited connotation or notion of a nationality or whatever, bloodline or whatever, in order to relate to people. When I look at the screens and when I look at what's happening in Gaza, just like you, I just think this is absolutely unfair. It should not happen to any people, regardless of their color of skin or nationality or bloodline or whatever. And that is enough drive, I think, for all of us to actually sense the urgency and the importance of trying to do something, whatever we can, to lift this horrendous experiences and to try to contribute somehow to humanizing the people who are suffering, the victims of this carnage. And the ultimate goal is to contribute somehow to stopping the bloodshed, to stop the killing, and go back to times when we can actually sit down around the table and talk how we can make this place better for everyone else. And I would like to just finish by saying that, yes, I accept that as a Palestinian, I guess I have a bit more responsibility. But I would like to say to this at this point that it's also the responsibility for anyone in the world. What we're seeing is just unacceptable and inhumane. It should not happen for any person, regardless of where they come from.
You're reminding me of an interview we recently did with Ahmed Al-Nauk, who's the co-editor of We Are Not Numbers, The Voices of Gaza's Youth. He's now in London, and I'll never forget this. I asked him to share memories of Gaza, and he said, they're all gone. The colleges are gone. The bookstores are gone. The cafes are gone. He said, every memory I have of Gaza has been smashed. And it's hard to wrap your head around that, Mahmoud, that so much has been just eviscerated.
It is true. I do, maybe this is an internal challenge for myself. I do not want to maybe accept this notion that it's all gone. I think he's right, and I think you're right, that it is gone physically. But I think we, in books and literature and people's stories, there is an also an important element of documenting that what was once there. And what was once there is important to document, not just to document history, but in order to keep the thread of line, if you like, the beginning of the thread, in order to rebuild, in order to reconstruct the future. Futures are not constructed out of vacuums. They have to be constructed out of what was once there. The complexities, the diversities, the multi-layer of the Gazan society is so rich that it is important for us to pick up where we last left in order to reconstruct a better and a society that can flourish and enjoy life in the future, just like where we do with someone else. So in one way, I kind of agree, particularly not to undermine the level of destruction that has been happening. But I think it's also our responsibility to keep hope and to keep our eyes also on the future. I can't personally wait for this war to stop in order to start rebuilding lives, rebuilding cultural institutions, rebuilding bookstores that you're talking about, rebuilding theaters, rebuilding life. And I hope that we're not too of a dreamers here. I think it is a very realistic and hopeful a perspective to start to speak about a future Gaza that is a place that is full of people and full of life.
Mahmoud, before we go to your colleagues, one more question. We have a few emails from listeners who say, can you please tell us more about why, if you're only an hour away, can't you go to Gaza? Are you able to travel to other places like Tel Aviv?
Yes, I mean, under the Israeli law, the Palestinians have different plate numbers, cars, plate numbers, and different ID colors. And it's a very complicated system of control that allow but forbade different groups of people, different ID colors, people from going to different places. So as a Jerusalemite, my ID color during the entirety of this last 40, 50 years was not allowed to go to Gaza except the years 1995, 96, 97. Similarly, people from Bethlehem, for example, who have different color ID color than me are not allowed to come to Jerusalem, for example. There's a very, very complicated system, arbitrary, of course, man-made system of ID colors and plate numbers that dictate ability of Palestinians to move within their country, within their territory. So yes, I can go to Tel Aviv, but I can't go to Gaza. People in Bethlehem can go to, I don't know, can go to Ramallah, but they can't come to Jerusalem, and so on and so forth. It's a very arbitrary and quite peculiar system. Mm.
Mahmoud Munah's family runs the educational bookshop in Jerusalem. It's one of the most celebrated Palestinian cultural institutions. In February, the Israeli police ransacked Mahmoud's bookshop and arrested him and his nephew for, quote, violating public order. They were held for 48 hours and were placed under house arrest. Mahmoud is co-editor of the new book, Daybreak in Gaza. We're also joined by Juliet Tuma, Global Communications Director for UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East. She travels frequently to Gaza, and she's been involved in the project from the start. Juliet, when were you last in Gaza?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. Look, and also great that you've given us this opportunity. I used to be allowed to travel to Gaza. I can no longer do that. Me and the rest of my colleagues at UNRWA are banned from going back to the occupied Palestinian territory. So we haven't been able to go back for over 7 months now. But I have been to Gaza before the war frequently when I lived in Jerusalem, because I served for UNRWA outside of Jerusalem, and then on a number of occasions during the war.
And what are your thoughts right now, Juliet? I mean, we're seeing absolutely devastating videos and photos of starvation, of people dying still on a daily basis. We did a show about the amputees. To think that 10 children a day are losing limbs in Gaza, according to the UN. What are your thoughts about how much, I ask every guest this question, how much longer can this last?
Well, first of all, it lasted 2 years too long. And I'm not entirely sure I have the ability to put any words to what is happening in Gaza and what has been happening at the World's Watch. I think it's impossible to describe it in words. All we can do is pay tribute to the children, to the mothers, to the fathers, to the older people in Gaza for surviving all of this. asking questions of A, how did we get here? How was this allowed? And how do we get out of this? Because what has been done to the people of Gaza is very, very difficult to undo.
Mm. Juliet Tuma is Global Communications Director for UNRWA. We're also joined by Matthew Teller, a UK-based author and broadcaster who is co-editor of Daybreak in Gaza. Matthew, you got involved in this project because you really want to uplift the voices of people living in Gaza. Before we do that, I think it's important to talk a bit about your background. You grew up in a Jewish family in London, and you now talk about your movement into anti-Zionism and the importance of understanding the difference between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. So can you tell us a bit about your background and how you got to this place?
Thanks very much indeed, Rose. Yes, I can. Yes, I was born and brought up in a Jewish family in London who had very strong identity with Israel and with Judaism as well. I am a fourth generation immigrant to the UK. All eight of my great grandparents arrived in London before the First World War, between about 1880 something and 1913, give or take, all from Eastern Europe, and all of them were Jewish. And so my parents and also their parents grew up with the stories of new arrivals in a big city and the racism and the discrimination that they experienced and their struggles to emerge from that. My parents felt very strongly the desire to assimilate into English society while also holding on very strongly to their Jewish identity as well. And that meant that while I was growing up as a young kid, the only holidays that we took overseas from England were to Israel. We went first when I was about 11. When I was 13, my father amazingly arranged for me to have my bar mitzvah twice, once in the synagogue that we went to at home in London, and again at the Western Wall in Jerusalem. So for that, and then it continued through my teenage years as well. So for that first period of my life, the first 20 years, give or take, I was receiving pro-Zionist messages. Israel was a force for good, was a force for positivity in my life. When I became an adult, when I started to gain more independence, I was using the privilege. I have a privilege of having a British passport. I'm white. I'm a male. I have all that basket of privileges that allows me to move around. I started to travel around the region in the Middle East. I lived in different places in Jerusalem and in other places as well, but also in Cairo and in Amman. I traveled to Beirut. I traveled to Syria. And I started hearing new stories about the place Israel that I thought I already understood, or you could say new ways of telling the stories that I thought I already understood. And then I started writing about it. So my career has been as a journalist and a writer. I've been very, very lucky to be able to visit Palestine dozens of times, hundreds of times, since I was a child. And that experience of 20 years of Zionism from my family, and then the following 20 years understanding the nature of the injustice that has been committed ostensibly in my name and for my benefit, has led me to understand what Zionism is and where it comes from, and then firmly to reject it.
Can you just elaborate on that a bit? Because I'm sure when you're giving book talks, I'm sure you're meeting people with a variety of very, very strong opinions. I'm guessing you
always
probably have this in your own family.
That's very true as well. Yes. Many members of my family disagree with me politically. Has there been a rift within the family? I guess there has been to some degree, yes. But We are still very close. I have close relatives who live in Israel. My father and my mother emigrated there when they were in their 80s, not that long ago, about 15 years ago or so. They use the privilege that they have as being Jewish. They use that privilege to emigrate to Israel. Israel allows anybody of Jewish background, how they define Jewish background, to arrive in Israel and immediately to claim citizenship. Of course, that privilege is not extended to Palestinians or to people who are not Jewish. And my father still lives there, and we are in contact, but we disagree politically very, very much indeed. It has been very awkward. It continues to be very awkward. But I think that experience is not unique by any means. It's not unique within a Jewish sphere. It's also not unique within a non-Jewish political sphere. The nature of politics over the last, even the last generation, certainly the last 10 years in the US, but also in Britain and in and around Europe as well, has been very, very divisive. And so we're experiencing those rifts and divisions within families along all sorts of different fault lines. And mine is not unique by any means. Mm.
Matthew Teller is a UK-based author and broadcaster, co-editor of the new book Daybreak in Gaza, with Mahmoud Mouna, whose family runs the educational bookshop in Jerusalem. It's one of the most celebrated Palestinian cultural institutions. Juliet Tuma is global communications director with UNRWA. She's been closely involved with Daybreak in Gaza since the beginning. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions for our guests, they wrote this book because they wanted to humanize people in Gaza who are often dismissed as statistics. There are about 100 stories in this book. We hear from poets, doctors, farmers, writers, shopkeepers, so many more. They write, "We contacted hundreds of people. At a time of profound anguish, bereavement, and loss, we found that Gazans were not only willing to talk, but often desperate to do so." You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Mahmoud, before we go to break, what would you like to say about the goal of the project to humanize people? Because you know what the Western media coverage can be like. I mean, the voices that you're elevating, we rarely see on our TV screens or in our papers. So can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it is unfortunate, actually, that we need to talk about this, but it is important. I think, unfortunately, the Palestinians and the Arabs and the people from the East generally, actually, for the last years, perhaps 100, 150 years, have suffered for not being able to narrate their own stories, their own narratives, and they were always in a way talked about by a middleman, so to speak, or by a mediator, whether that for the lack of languages or the lack of the ability to communicate directly to the West, or actually by the institutionalized systems that didn't allow them the space to actually express their own stories and to tell their own perspective. But I think on the issue of Israel-Palestine particularly, there has been a history, at least for the last 70 years, of the Palestinians' narrative being less known about in the West. We know, of course, that the Palestinian-Israeli conflict has dominated the politics on the Middle East. But generally, when you listen or you read or you look at the newspapers or the TV screens on how the Middle East has been presented, you rarely hear directly from the mouth of the I don't want to say just the victims, but also the Palestinians or the Arabs themselves. Also in books, I mean, I someone who works in a bookshop, I know that's the expert, so to speak, and the veteran journalist and all of that cover this area has always been Westerns, middle class, Europeans, Americans, but really the Palestinians themselves had the privilege to communicate with the West directly. The result, I think, is a huge misunderstanding and a gap in knowledge. And what we're trying to do with this book is to give the voices for the people themselves. I mean, we you said we wrote the book, we edited the book, actually. We allowed the writers themselves to write their own story. We had to use the skills of our abilities and our safety and our headspace to edit and to kind of package the story in a way that will be suitable for publishing and for readers in the West to read it. But essentially, it is a platform. The book is a platform that I believe doesn't exist easily for people in the West to directly listen and engage with the people of Gaza and with the Palestinian at large. I would like to say often that the book is a long overdue conversation that has been put on the side. And I like to say that the book has brought it forward for people in America or for the Western world to directly read and engage with people from all walks of life directly from Gaza. And then after that, let's have a conversation about what people think and what people political views are. I would like to finish by saying a lot of dehumanization is in place now, but that dehumanization is essentially fostering on the fact of lack of communication and lack of understanding. So what I hope for this book is to create a platform of direct communication between the, so to speak, the Western society, the English speaking, because the book is in English. And hopefully by creating this form of understanding, we are encountering this dehumanization process.
Today on Your Call, we are speaking with the co-editors of the new book, Daybreak in Gaza, Stories of Palestinian Lives and Culture. Mahmoud Muna's family runs the educational bookshop in Jerusalem, one of the most celebrated Palestinian cultural institutions. He's only about an hour away from Gaza, but he's never been there. Matthew Teller is a UK-based author and broadcaster. He is the author of Nine Quarters of Jerusalem, a new biography of the old city. He grew up in a Jewish family in London and now talks about his movement into anti-Zionism. Juliet Tuma is Global Communications Director for UNRWA. She used to travel frequently to Gaza, but has not been able to enter recently. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are joined by the editors of the new book, Daybreak in Gaza, Stories of Palestinian Lives and Culture. Today we're joined by Matthew Teller, a UK-based author and broadcaster, Juliet Tuma, Global Communications Director with UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East, Mahmoud Muna, his family runs the educational bookshop in Jerusalem, one of the most celebrated Palestinian cultural institutions. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Elizabeth in San Francisco. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you so much. I used to work for University of California, San Francisco, and one of the main obstacles that we found here, even among the progressives here in California, is that whatever we have tried, people who worked, healthcare workers who were opposing the killing, the mass killing of healthcare workers in Gaza, and people who have spoken out for the 274 journalists who were killed in Gaza, we have been attacked by UCSF, whose main funder is the Helen Diller Foundation, who supports Canary Mission. When I say we, I also mean personally, myself, as well as Dr. Rupa Myra, who was fired. So in the UK, I understand that there's a very a lot of repression against anybody even mentioning the word Palestine. And it seems that we're going down the same route here. In fact, the Department of Education sent a letter to UCSF claiming it has not done enough to quell, quote, anti-Semitism. Whenever you mention Palestine, it seems that you get slandered by being considered anti-Semitic. I'm Chilean-American, and I fought against fascism in Chile, so being called anti-Semitic is very, very, it's completely inappropriate. Even whenever anybody speaks about Palestine. So I'm wondering what, you know, how this is, how the person in the UK, your guest in the UK, is dealing with this issue regarding anyone who tried to speak up for Palestine.
Thank you for the call. Matthew?
Yes, thank you for the question. The UK, yeah, is under a great deal of pressure at the moment, people in the UK who are trying to advocate and trying to stand up for Palestine, because of the actions of the UK government in particularly outlawing an organization called Palestine Action, who take direct action against companies that are complicit in the genocide. And so, now it's become illegal to say that you support Palestine Action, and it's become illegal to hold a banner, for instance, that says I support Palestine Action, and the police have been dragging people away. It's shocking and appalling. It's very difficult for people who want to advocate for Palestine to know exactly what to do with this and how to still continue. Marches are continuing. People are still advocating. They're now people are trying to adjust their wording so that the police will not interpret their banners or their T-shirts as supporting this particular banned organization, which is absurd and ridiculous. It's a dreadful situation, and why the media establishment and the industry that I'm associated with, the publishing establishment, is not standing up and condemning this kind of oppression is, to be honest, is not clear to me. There appear to be connections and links that are invisible, that are supporting a pro-Israel narrative that continues regardless of the facts on the ground, regardless of the facts of what is being done to the people in Gaza. It's shocking.
And also, for people who have not been following this closely, the BBC has a piece from today. Six people have been charged with terrorism offenses relating to encouraging support for the banned group Palestine Action. These charges relate to gatherings held in London, Manchester, Cardiff, and there's going to be a big rally on Saturday. People are expecting over about 1,000 to attend near Parliament.
I would imagine many, many more than 1,000. Yes, a Palestine Action, when I say it's been outlawed or criminalised, it means that the government has termed this particular group of people who take direct action as being terrorist. This is a terrorist organisation now, on a par with the terrorist organisations that you may be familiar with in the US and around the world. Mm. So the people who have been charged with supporting terrorism, that can simply mean holding a placard that says, I support Palestine Action.
Well, thank you for the call, Elizabeth. If you'd like to join us today, we're speaking with the editors of the new book, Daybreak in Gaza, Stories of Palestinian Lives and Culture. Matthew Teller is a UK-based author and broadcaster. Juliet Tuma is Global Communications Director with UNRWA. Mahmoud Muna's family runs the educational bookshop in Jerusalem, one of the most celebrated Palestinian cultural institutions. The Israeli police ransacked his bookshop in February, arrested him and his nephew for, quote, violating public order, and they were held for 48 hours and placed under house arrest. You really wanted to elevate the voices of people in Gaza and tell their stories, and it is so devastating to learn that some of the people in your book have been killed by the Israeli military, including Hiba Abu Nada, a Palestinian writer and educator, so young, born in 1991. Her novel Oxygen Is Not for the Dead was recognized in the 2017 Sharjah Awards for Arab Creativity. Shortly after the final entry in her diary on the evening of October 20th, 2023, an Israeli airstrike on the Manara neighborhood of Khan Yunis killed Hiba and her family in her home. It's just, Mahmoud, it's so hard to read these stories. I just want to read from her journal in the beginning, October 7th, 2023, almost 7 in the morning. We go to sleep thinking about very ordinary things, a university exam, buying a new piece of clothing, worrying about applying to a job. Then suddenly the sound of the alarm changes. Exams are canceled. Schools and universities are shut down. Gunpowder blasts everywhere. Al Jazeera turns red. We turn on the radio, telegram. In our minds, we start to reschedule all our plans. In Gaza, everything changes in an instant. I think it's just these stories are so powerful, especially these journals, because when you're not there and you're watching so much destruction, it's just hard to even comprehend what's happening. And in some cases, they write about just an ordinary day, but then they write about hearing drones and bombs and losing their family members.
Yeah, I mean, this is there's multi layers here. There's one, this is a war, and war is obviously is horrible. But this is not just a war. This is a war over 2 million people in a very crowded area with no ability to actually leave the area. So these are people who are essentially stranded in a place where just bombs are falling quite heavily from the skies on them on daily basis over the last 2 years. The inability to escape this is quite new. All previous wars, people can actually leave somewhere. But here we have this very, very small strip of land that has been closed from the Israeli side. And then the only border was with Rafah was also bombed by the Israelis, and the gates were closed. So people are essentially just waiting for the, I don't know, for the luck or destiny to live or die. Mm. The second component add to all of this is the mass, large scale of bombing. We're seeing now twice the amount of bombs that's kind of nuclear weapons have been used in like places like Nagasaki. It's also the amount of impunity in which the engaged army enjoy. We have seen very, very little credibility over the action of the Israeli army in Gaza, very little investigations. We're speaking about large, large numbers, hundreds of people from the press team has died without any investigations or without any credibility or without any questioning. We're seeing a lot of paramedics and people who work in the health sector. We're seeing around 30 hospitals that has been completely destroyed. Speaking about universities and school that has completely been wiped off the face of the earth. Mm. So the large scale of bombing, impunity, and the inability of people escaping is creating what we call, what my colleague Juliet said, undescribable. We have not seen anything like this previously in history. And the fact that all of this is screened in our screens live and we can see it over the last 24, 23 months is almost unbelievable. It's literally unbelievable, actually. I don't know if the listeners can literally comprehend the scale in which we are speaking about. And therefore, there is a very, well, there's a strong urgency to stop the war and to stop this carnage and this killing frenzy. But what also urgent is to collect the testimonies of people who are living through this. Mm. There's an act of selfishness almost to collect these stories, but it's also in one way giving people at least the most human act of storytelling. Storytelling is one of the ancient human values that we humans have created, the ability to tell their own stories. And what you see in the part that you read about from Hiba is just that, is a person, all what they can do is they can just write and tell us their testimony during these horrendous times.
And going back to Hiba's story, again, she was killed on the evening of October 20th, 2023 by an Israeli airstrike. And it's just so haunting because there's a journal entry before she was killed. She writes, "Before God, we in Gaza are either martyrs or witnesses to liberation, and we all wait to learn where we will fall. We are all waiting, oh God, your vow is true." A Palestinian writer and educator who wrote the novel Oxygen is not for the dead. And she was killed on October 20th, 2023. You know, Juliet, it's so important to also emphasize that so much of this would not be happening if it were not for the support of the United States. There's an article in The Guardian in February The U.S. announced the approval of the sale of more than almost $8 billion in bombs, missiles, and related equipment to Israel. The State Department signed off on the sale of almost $7 billion in bombs. In addition, $660 million in Hellfire missiles. What a name. I don't even know what those are, but we can imagine. Can you talk about that aspect of this, that this would not be possible without the support of the United States?
I mean, there is no question that all of this was allowed to continue because of inaction of the member states to stop the horrors. The way to stop the horror, the immediate way to stop the horror, and this was very early on, almost 2 years ago, is to reach a ceasefire. And that took forever to happen, and it was always short-lived. It was never long-term, and the bombardment would continue. But that's what's still needed right now, and that's what we need to focus on, and that's the least that the people of Gaza need is a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, you said that you might have some sound from the people who share their stories and write their own stories in Daybreak in Gaza?
I do. Let me play you. I've got a couple of very short clips, which are, you know, just over 1 minute long, which were recorded last year. We were speaking to some contributors directly. I interviewed people in London, Mahmoud interviewed people in Jerusalem and other places. And we were also speaking over Zoom to people in the US or people in France or people in Sweden, whatever, as well as people in Gaza, wherever we could. People were contributing from Gaza in different ways, in text and by phone, but also by voice note as well. So this is a voice note which comes from a man called Dr. Mohammed Agalkurdi, who is a specialist in limb reconstruction. And he recorded this in the first part in the spring of last year. I'm just going to hold my phone up to the mic so you can hear.
I was driving from Khan Yunis to Deir el-Balah, taking the coastal road from where one is able to catch sight of Gaza, my home. Smoke was coming from the western part of it. And that's where I lived. Literally, my neighborhood was burning. Or in other words, my home was burning. What killed me most was when I turned on the radio, Fairuz was streaming and singing, "Take me home. Ruddani ila biladi." When it first started, they said only 3 days and you'll get back home. And now we're counting more than 7 months. Living the worst conditions a human being can endure. Displaced. The majority of us thirsty with no access to drinking clean water. Sometimes hungry. Surrounded by death and destruction.
It's a very moving and shocking piece of audio. Mm. The second clip that I have is from a woman who works with Juliet, who Juliet knows. She's called Amani Shaltut. She's the archivist for the United Nations photo archive in Gaza City. And I was interviewing her. I asked her a few questions about her work and about the favorite images of hers in the archive that she looks after. And she chose to reply by voice. And this is, again, this is about 1 minute that she recorded for us. And it's, I find this also very moving. She's continuing to talk, to tell us her story, to tell us her message, even while you can hear the drones overhead and you can hear the bombs falling behind her as well. I'm just going to press play.
Hi, and salam from Gaza. First of all, I wish you all the best in your book. About my favorite images are those about education, particularly those show children learning in open air or in the tents, where some of the pupils were sitting on the sands and they don't even have seats. Actually, for me, these images show the desire and a need to change for better and a kind of a challenge to all of these tough circumstances, and that mustn't be the fate forever. And as we used to say that education is the passport for our better future, and also and it could be make us proud of the our identity. Many, many thanks for you and for all those who stand in solidarity with Gaza. It's really, really appreciated. And actually, what you are doing is a turning point in history.
Matthew, that is so beautiful and hard to hear. And it reminded me of a statistic I did not know until we started doing these shows. In September 2018, a report from the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics found that Palestinians have one of the highest literacy rates in the world. And it's incredible to think about that and to think about all of the universities that have been destroyed.
Absolutely. People are, who we spoke to for the book as well, were often very proud and very, very insistent to emphasize the degree of literacy, not just in Gaza, but across all of Palestinian society. I mean, Mahmoud can talk much more eloquently than this, than me about this. He is, his family is very literate. He comes from a very cultured family as well. Mm-hmm. And his personal history attests to that pride in education and pride in knowledge and literacy.
Well, Mahmoud, I'm sorry, we only have about 30 seconds left, but can you leave us with some final thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's nothing better to leave on a note of hope, actually. So that's what I want to bring in to your audience who are hearing us now. It is a bleak moment in lots of parts of the world, but especially in Gaza. We are literally witnessing the ethnic cleansing of a whole 2 million people and possibly replacing somewhere else. And unfortunately, there's an American stamp over this. But we should not forget that ultimately justice will prevail, and victims will see justice in their lifetime or after their life. But we must not forget that hope is what we should be harboring at this point. We should not rest to populism and to ideas of revenge. Victims are suffering for sure, but they are waiting for the day in which they see freedom and they see justice and they see accountability in a principle that we dedicated the book to. I think the people of Gaza love life. They have demonstrated that throughout the last 70 and 80 years. And I can't wait for the day when this war will stop and they, with us, will start to rebuild Gaza. Gaza that will be a testimony for people who rejected hate and embraced love and hope.
Mahmoud Mouna and his family run the Educational Bookshop in Jerusalem. Matthew Teller is a UK-based author and broadcaster. Juliet Tuma is Global Communications Director for UNRWA, and they are co-editors of the new book, Daybreak in Gaza, Stories of Palestinian Lives and Culture. Mahmoud, Juliet, and Matthew, thank you for this very important book, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rose. It's been a pleasure.